Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the November 25 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView. View.
Well, the commodity markets are in a holiday hold. Can they hold is really the question. We'll try to find out today on this edition.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Vaclavic from Straits Financial out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Mike Georgie from Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media on the land-grant university, the University of Illinois. Support comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of five Illinois Farm Economic Summit meetings December 12th through the 16th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details on their website, farmdoc.illinois.edu. Well, let's open our discussion today with this question, gentlemen. Cash corn prices in large parts of the country remain above the board price. Usually, this is a sign the market wants, even needs, to buy corn, yet the futures price of December corn has dropped nearly $2 since its August 29 high. Why is it cash basis remains at an inverse? We'll start with you, Mike Georgie.
Well, I think the elevators and the ethanol plants still need grain. They still need corn. Ethanol may lose their subsidies at the end of the year. They're producing ethanol at all-time highs every week. So the demand is still there, but it's the world economy and the outside traders and the macroeconomics that are holding back on the cash price. And the ethanol plants and elevators know that they need to raise the basis if they're going to get anything out of the farmer's hand.
Bill Mayer?
Well, I think the elevators are trying to get control of the corn that's out in the country. We had a reduction in yields this year, and a lot of that reduction is what typically comes into the elevator. I think we're seeing, you know, January contracts. We're hearing some places where they're starting to pull those in next week and things like that. So I think the elevators wanting to get the corn into the elevator. And, you know, the disconnect between the futures and the cash market right now, I think it's a complex situation, but it's kind of similar to maybe some of the disconnect we had in the past where we had the real wide week basis and high futures prices.
And Greg Johnson.
Well, basis is really about farmer movement, and the farmer movement with the big drop in the board is almost non-existent. You know, the farmers have gotten 50 to 60% of their crops sold ahead at some very good prices. And quite frankly, they don't need money to generate cash flow at this point. They will at some point in time. But right now, they're content to sit on their hands and hope this thing comes back.
One of your answers alluded to this. But, Bill, is it the domestic usage that's leading the price of corn, cash corn, and the broader global demand reflected in the futures market that portends maybe a, and I'll use a, a word I might get in trouble for, more reasonable price for corn in the future?
I don't know if I could say that's for sure. I think it's definitely the local price or the cash price is being dictated by the need for movement of corn and the domestic usage. I think you can see that with the ethanol plants and that part of it. But I don't know if I'd go so far as to say the future is reflecting more of a global. That's a good point, though.
Mike, Ukraine this week was muttered under the breath of traders as they took note of the emerging nation's natural resources once again and the ability of it to marshal them. Is it just a player wannabe or a real threat to the U.S. export market?
Well, I think everybody out there is a real threat to the U.S. market. Everybody has kind of had a better yield this year. The world grain supply or production has increased, and I think we can see some increase in that production. And also, their prices are cheaper than ours.
Let's talk the ethanol for a moment. January will bring with it the end of the 45 cent per gallon credit. That's been largely responsible for the price of 10% ethanol at the pump being most of the time cheaper than non-ethanol enhanced gasoline. As the other part of the government corn ethanol encouragement policy is ramped up, that's the mandate, it's become increasingly harder to find an ethanol-free gasoline pump. Given the mandate, will the loss of the 45-cent credit leave any noticeable drop in corn usage to produce ethanol?
That's a good question. Quite frankly, we haven't had this scenario before, so this is going to be kind of uncharted territory. You would think that ethanol demand would cut back a little bit after the first of the year, but that remains to be seen.
I think that you're probably seeing some artificial demand where the producers are, you know, gearing up and getting as much produced and blended as they can here before the first of the year, before the credit off. But the bottom line is it looks like right now there's still good margin to be made in that ethanol production. And even without the blending credit, I think you continue, as long as gasoline prices stay higher than the ethanol, to blend.
Yeah, I think that's very true. If crude oil prices stay where they're at, I think you're going to see a good usage for ethanol, and I don't think you're going to see a lower demand. The only thing they could do is if they would lower the mandate, then that would make a difference. But you got the demand for corn, and I don't think it'll make that much difference in price.
Greg Johnson, demand for the corn, and I've asked this several weeks in a row, but demand for corn from our part of the planet, our part of the United States Corn Belt, has been very strong going to the southeast. Does it continue to be so?
Yes, yes. The drop in the futures market is basically a lot of speculation getting out of the market. The cash demand is still very strong, both from the ethanol plants and from the feeder market. We've seen the chicken market back off a little bit, but we've seen cattle and hog demand stay very strong. Prices are still very good, very profitable. So until something changes, we're still going to see good domestic demand.
Can you put that in perspective with Ohio and the way it's lagged behind in its harvest at this time?
Well, that's part of it. I mean, Ohio is only 50% harvested, if that. But even so, I think in general, elevators didn't fill up. Farmers maybe built more storage. The yields were a little bit down. All that combines to tell me that demand is going to stay strong and basis is going to stay strong.
And I think if you look at the southwest side, I think you really have that pull going both directions out of the Midwest. The several of the southwestern states, as far as production goes, were down pretty substantially this year on yields. So I think you've got some being pulled out of the western part of the Central Corn Belt going that direction as well.
This week in his weekly outlook from Purdue University, Chris Hurt wrote about the hog market, suggesting that next year would be a very good year for the hog industry and would be the third year in a row that they might make profits and finally break even after two really bad years. Will there be enough demand out of the hog market to continue to support the price of corn over the coming year?
Oh, I think so. I think hog producers are somewhat expanding. I've got a couple customers that are expanding in their hog production. And the demand from China, you know, that's what everybody's excited about. China needs to produce more pork to feed their population, but also they need more corn to feed the hogs. So they figure they will either have a higher demand for pork to feed the population or there will be a higher demand for corn by them increasing their hog production. So I think hogs going into next year have a real good outlook.
Well, let's turn our attention to the soybean markets, which have crept back to a level not seen for about a year, and this week filled a gap left in the lead option weekly chart in October of 2010. It is a bearish technical sign, I suppose. Are there fundamental reasons to be bearish in the soybean market, too?
Fundamentally, I mean, I think one of the things that our listeners, producers have to understand is this is a dynamic market. It's flowing as prices go lower. I think you build demand as prices go higher. You cut demand, and that's what the market did this summer is it went high enough to back off on some of the demand. But I think we really have to look at it from where the USDA has usage now, and I'm not so sure that we haven't got the usage numbers down there pretty low to where they should be. From a fundamental standpoint, it all is really going to depend on South America as far as beans go. I think the trade talk right now is some huge numbers from South America. You know, they're getting a heck of a good start, but we got a long ways to go, just like we know here that month prior to harvest is what's really important. So I guess that's kind of where I come in on the fundamental side.
Beans filled the gap.
Yeah, beans filled the gap at 1138. That's 68% retracement. Our outlook is still looking that we could get down to 1111. But it is fundamentals. I mean, this time of the year, we should be making great export sales. We're 25% behind on exports. The protein quality of our beans this year are not very good. So, you know, the outlook for them doesn't look real exciting.
China has been a latecomer to the U.S. for soybeans this season, and there continues to be new sales of old beans from South America to China. Is this a disturbing pattern?
Well, last year, China really didn't step in and buy U.S. beans until February, March. Mike's right. You'd like to see us exporting beans now, and it's a little disconcerting to see that we are running behind. It's not to say that we can't catch up, but once again, China is the wild card in this whole equation.
I think that 11-10 number that Mike talked about is a good support number, and let's see what the exports do here over the next 3 weeks or so after we get down to some of these lower prices, I guess is kind of my thought.
If you're in a wait-and-see pattern, what are you telling producers about new crops or about old crop soybean sales?
Well, I think right now you kind of back away from that. I'm assuming you know that guys, as Greg had talked about earlier, have enough sold to meet their cash flow needs and that. If you're not in that situation, I think you look for maybe 1180 or so. There's a possibility, I think, of some bounces up that area to make some sales. But I think other than that, if you've got 50 to 60% sold already, I think you just kind of stand aside right now.
I think that's what, our producers, if they had them in their own bins, they locked the doors, they're waiting for better prices. If they had them in the elevator, we had suggested weeks ago to sell them, and if you want to re-own them, use options rather than pay the expense to store them at the elevator.
Can I pull all three of you across the board on how far along on old crop sales, corn and soybeans, you believe producers are? Where have they marketed to at this point?
I would say they're probably 65% sold on corn and probably a similar amount on beans.
I would say, you know, 2/3 on corn and probably 50 to 60% on beans.
I'd have to agree with that. I mean, everybody is in their own. I mean, some don't have enough sold, and some have too much sold. So I'd say that's pretty good average.
Greg, is that about normal for this time of year in your experience?
Yeah, it is. Maybe a little bit behind, but we've had such good prices, and then with the lower yield, I'd say that's brought that percentage up a little bit more.
As we made our way through, and I'll take a poll on all of you, as we made our way through the harvest season, most everybody was not completely confident, but of the idea that prices were high enough, the cash bids were high enough, the corn should be marketed. We still have an inverse. Where do you stand on the last 35% of sales?
We have to lower our sights. The uncertainty in the world, not just in the United States, but over in Europe, we just have to lower our sights. Farmers are still saying, when's corn going to get back to $7? We have to get rid of that question. I don't think corn is going to go back to $7. You know, we need to lower our sights. You know, we need to make sales on a scale-up basis. You know, we're at basically $6 cash corn now. If it gets to $6.25, we need to sell some, and we need to be completely out of old crop corn if it ever gets back to $6.50.
I think that right now we're kind of in a holding, just wait and see pattern. I'd kind of like to see the January stocks report. You know, as you look out here, negative charts, negative, I mean, we really can't come up with anything positive, it seems like, in a week like this. You know, what is it that comes into the market to, you know, change that or to bring us back maybe to the fundamentals more? I'm not sure, but I guess at this point I don't see any sense in, you know, pushing it and just, you know, wait and see, maybe see that January 12th stocks report is what I'd like to see first.
Well, I agree with both. I think you wait, but I think if we get to 625, 650, you make the sales. You don't wait for 7.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is the November 25 edition. In studio with us, you just heard Mike Georgie. He's with Allendale. Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing here, too, along with Greg Johnson of the Andersons. When we come back in just a couple minutes, we'll talk with Joe Vaklovic. He's at Straits Financial in Chicago, Illinois.
It's National Cake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1836, John McAdam died. He invented McAdam pavement for roads. And by the way, the macadamia nut was also named for him. In 1867, J.B. Sutherland patented the refrigerated railroad car. The first cars had double walls, roof, and floor, and the space between was filled with sawdust, felt, or other suitable materials. Ice changers at each end of the car carried about 800 pounds of ice, and hanging flaps were designed to maintain air circulation. In 1876, Willis Carrier was born, an American inventor. He created air conditioning, and his rational psychometric formula is still essential to this day for air conditioning engineers. His first system controlled temperature and humidity in a Brooklyn printing plant. And in 1915, W. Attlee Burpee died, an American seed man. He was the founder of the world's largest mail-order seed company in 1876. Just 18 years old, Burpee started his company in Philadelphia with a passion of plants and a mother willing to lend him $1,000. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. In studio with us today, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Mike Georgie of Allendale, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. On the phone line, Joe Vaklovic of Straits Financial. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Joe. Thanks for taking the time with us.
No problem, Todd. Always glad to be on the show.
Why don't you introduce Straits Financial to us for just a bit? It's an organization that's, I don't know how new, but new, of course, to our listeners.
Yeah, you know, Straits Financial is the brokerage division of a company called CWT Group. CWT is the largest publicly listed logistics company in Southeast Asia. So it's actually a company that's very big in the cash commodity business, warehousing, shipping, and now brokerage. So it's very new here to the United States, but I like where I'm at. I like being with a company that's actually in the cash commodity business.
It's in cash commodities and in freight, and you are in the grains part of it. Why did they introduce a grains portion to their cadre of investments?
Well, we think that there's, you know, a need out there for some global insight into some of these markets. I think that CWT has some resources, you know, on the world markets and the grains that we can take advantage of here in the U.S. Also, you know, CWT wanted to set something up where they could do some business here in the United States through the exchanges and have some people here in Chicago.
It is not a small company.
Straits itself in Chicago, we're a small office. There's about 20 people here, but no, there's actually we have warehouses in 38 countries, so it's actually very large.
Okay, tell me about your position in the marketplace and what you think of corn and the European model at this time.
Well, the market's soft. You know, a lot of people are talking about the demand situation when it comes to corn. Export demand continues to be something that pops up. You know, we only export, you know, 10 to 15% of the corn we produce here in the United States. I don't really think that's the issue. Domestic demand, you know, is good. Like you guys said, you know, ethanol margins are good. Livestock margins are good. So I think this is more of a money flow thing. You know, if you look at some of the CFTC reports here the last couple weeks, you know, the managed money and the fund trader has lightened up significantly. Funds are actually short the soybean market right now. As of last week, they were short 6,000 contracts of soybeans. You know, you can put that up to 15,000 probably after this week. They're still long quite a bit of corn and short wheat. And the corn, you know, they're long 130,000 contracts. That went down 18,000 last week. I'm sure it went down a lot more this week. You know, a lot of it has to do with macroeconomic concerns. The European situation isn't good, and, you know, a lot of the commodities, especially, you know, this week got beat up. You know, grains followed everything lower. I think another big thing that you guys didn't touch on, the situation with MF Global. MF Global did a lot of grain business. I don't know what the percentage was of the volume that they did on the, you know, in the corn, soybean, or wheat markets. But I'm going to tell you that there's a lot of big hedge funds, there's a lot of banks, there's a lot of index funds that are going to shy away from the futures markets right now because of what happened there. You know, if they don't feel like their money's safe, and we're talking about millions and billions of dollars, and these people, you know, who have inflated these markets now for the last 4 or 5 years, if they decide that they want to pull some money out or sit on the sidelines, then, you know, you better get used to some lower prices.
We talked about basis. I don't know if you deal with that. Do you feel that the cash market has to go in any particular direction if the cash, if the basis is still strong? Is cash going to have to go up, or is it just the outside markets that are pushing this?
Well, I think, like I said, I think it's more of a money flow versus a fundamental thing. I do believe that one issue here is that I think farmers are holding a lot of grain right now. And I don't know that that's necessarily ever been a bullish thing in my time. You know, it seems like when farmers get on the wrong side of this thing, a lot of times it doesn't work out. Now, I think that the market's doing the best that it can here. And by the market, I say the cash market is doing what it can to buy grain here. One thing that, you know, aside from basis, is if you look at spreads, they've really gone quite a ways into taking the carry out of this market. You know, from Dease corn to March corn is only about 6 or 7 cents right now, and it was, you know, 14, 15, 16 just a couple weeks ago. So there's not really much incentive here, you know, as far as the cash market to hold grain. You know, they're not paying you, you know, to carry it. They're not paying you to store it. It just seems like the market's doing the best it can, and it's working hard to try to get the grain out of farmers' hands without rallying the futures.
Yeah, Joe, this is Bill Mayer. Talk about the European situation. Today there's even some talk about, you know, some debt worries with Japan. Where are we at as far as a timeline on this thing? Can you look forward and see some kind of solution, especially this European debt crisis? Or what you guys feel on that?
Well, I don't claim to be an economist or be an expert on the macroeconomic situation. But it seems to me like, you know, we're back and forth with this Europe thing day to day and week to week. You know, some days we come into work here and you know, the euro's up and it looks like everything's good to go. And other days, you know, it's just the exact opposite. So I don't know what the time frame is. I don't think anybody really does. I mean, you look at these outside markets and they're all really choppy. You know, the equities are back and forth. You know, the currencies are back and forth. The dollar's been on a little bit of a rally here. So I don't know. I don't know that anybody knows the time frame, to be honest with you.
Hey, Joe, the Chinese government has been trying to slow down their economy, trying to prevent a housing bubble. We've seen the GDP slow down from a, albeit high number, 9-10%, and now they're trying to slow it down a little bit. But that's caused some worry in the markets that maybe China is slowing down and that's going to ripple through the whole world economy. What's your take on China's attempt to slow down their economy?
Well, I know there was some data out this morning that said that manufacturing in China has hit a three-year low. I mean, obviously, when we're talking China, we're probably talking a little bit more about the soybean market than we are the corn market or the wheat market. You know, China's bought some beans here over the last couple weeks out of the Gulf. I know that our exports are still way behind pace. That's why the beans are doing what they're doing. I mean, obviously, if anybody thinks China's going to slow down, I mean, that's bad for anywhere in the world that makes anything. Because all these guys do is buy our beans and buy our manufactured goods, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think that it's just another thing to stack on top of the European thing, the MF Global thing, and now we're talking about Chinese economy. It's just kind of a perfect storm of bearish news here, you know, this week especially.
Yeah, would you chalk up the choppiness in all the markets to lack of liquidity, and is that in direct relationship to MF Global and the exit of many of those hedge funds and that investment money?
I think it's possible. I mean, there's no way to actually say if that's, you know, the case or not, but I know that there is some lighter volume in a lot of these markets. Maybe the liquidity's not there. Maybe just nobody's excited about being long or short the stock market right now. You know, there's a number of factors. I personally think the MF Global thing has something to do with that, but there's no way to prove that one way or the other.
You know, we talked about the global demand and global production of grains. Do you see a problem the U.S. may have here in the years to come with the possibility of Ukraine and all these other countries having more supply to sell to South Korea, Japan, and Egypt?
Well, I think that, you know, overall in the coming years, I mean, you know, granted the U.S. we've had a couple of bad years of production years as far as, you know, the corn crop goes, especially. We haven't had ideal weather situations. But, I mean, I think just, you know, output from everywhere is going to increase, you know, United States included. I mean, I'm sure you guys have heard some of these seed salesmen talk, I mean, about what the yield possibilities are 5 or 10 years from now. And, I mean, the United States is still miles ahead of everybody as far as technology when it comes to production of grain, and I think it stays that way. But, yeah, you know, we're going to get a little bit more competition, but there's always going to be more demand out there, and the demand from these developing countries isn't going anywhere.
Joe, with our $15 trillion, $16 trillion deficit here in the United States, you would think that that might be a little inflationary and weak to the dollar. But are we in that much better shape than the Europeans, that the European the euro is going down and the U.S. dollar, is it going to continue to stay strong even with our kind of deficits that we're looking at?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing with currencies is it's all relative. You know, the dollar might be bad and our inflation's bad, but, you know, the European thing might be worse. The one big issue here is that, you know, the dollar is the world reserve currency, and that kind of trumps a lot of things when it comes to, you know, what currency is worth what, and I think the dollar is going to, you know, maybe hang on here for a little bit, especially if the Europe thing gets worse. So, you know, currency thing, yeah, they're all bad. Maybe the dollar's a little better than the rest of them.
Joe, thanks so much.
Not a problem at all. You guys have a good one.
You too. Joe Vaclavic is with Straits Financial. Now time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Greg Johnson.
We need to lower our sights, lower our targets, 6.25 for corn. We need to make some catch-up sales there.
Bill Mayer?
It's this time of the year to pause and give thanks for the blessings that we've gotten, the bounty that we've gotten. I hope everybody takes a little time to do that as we move forward here.
And Mike Georgie.
Yeah, I think everybody's got to watch this basis because we could definitely lose the basis and lose cash or gain cash and lose basis. So we have got to control that.
And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Our thanks to our panelists in studio and to our guest on the phone line. Remember, you can always hear us anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including the daily programming from the pre-opening to the closing market reports. I'm Todd Gleason.